session number 11963, reel 7.
Captain Henderson, reel 7. We were talking about the period after you'd been at Hooge, while you were going up and down in on the sort of Western Front, in fairly quiet sectors in 1915. Did you get a leave at all in 1915, do you remember?
Towards the end. I'll tell you about my leave. Leave parties were made up by the orderly room people, of course, for people who'd been out with the battalion from Guinea. And we had arranged to move up the same day to south of the Ypres salient. And the leave party was called forth at 10 o'clock at night. You had to attend this little departure routine. And I was one of them. And there was an officer there, of course, and the regimental sergeant major. And he said, will you read him, Sergeant Major, please? And when it came, he mentioned my name. And the duty officer immediately says, he's a candidate for commission, with the idea of stopping me going because I was a candidate for commission, you see. And I always remember the officer stepped forward and said, I don't care a damn what he's going to be, it's what he is now. He's been here, he's been out with the lads, and he goes.
What do you remember about that leave then?
Nothing outstanding. You were simply marched away from wherever you were, whether you were in the line or not. You were a leave party, six or seven, or probably eight, you see, and you were told that you would get a train at a certain place, bearing in mind that continental time wasn't the same as English time, and you had to make your own way there. And you made your way there by stopping a lorry and asking where he was going and this sort of thing. But in most cases, the battalion provided some... Of course, it was all mules and horses in those days. It was wasn't possible to get a, you know. But you got there, you had plenty of time. Leaving Ypres salient or anything like that, well you made for Poppering. There was always a railway station. And after he said I was a candidate for commission and this sort of thing, the officer said, never mind, he's going. And that was my first leave. We got a train to Calais and crossed the... and got the 12 o'clock train, which I knew always ran from London, and got to Newcastle the next morning. Yes, happy days those, right, Joe?
And what state were you in when you got back? Did you have any problems with... I mean, you'd had lice and all things.
Lousy. You had a feeling that you'd come in amongst a lot of angels when you saw everybody walking about enjoying life, you know. But I enjoyed my...
Did you have to de-louse before you went into the house, that sort of thing?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, after that leave... and subsequent leaves, I knew a chap in Newcastle whose son was a local singer, and he used to come and meet me and let me go to his house where I took my whole things off and threw them out into the back, into the air, so that I could go home clean. He always assured me that he would always let me clean myself up before I went home.
How did you spend your leave, that first leave?
Oh, visiting people, mainly saying how do you do and this sort of thing.
Did people understand what life had been like for you? I mean, not so, in a place like Hooge or in that first attack, did people understand?
No, I don't think they had the faintest idea of what we'd been through. They couldn't, because, first of all, it hadn't happened anywhere before in our time, and they didn't know Belgium and France and Germany were far more removed from their orbit than it is now. They had no idea what was happening.
Did you try and tell them, or did you leave them in their ignorance?
Well, I did. On my first leave, attend the Wesleyan Chapel on a Saturday night and spoke to them about what I'd found in the continent, on the continent. And some people still remember it. But I simply had to just run through the things that you and I have talked about without polishing things up. There's no use trying to polish things up. You might as well speak the truth.
Did you try and conceal how bad it was from your parents, for instance?
Yeah. Say that again?
Did you try and conceal what it was like from your parents? I mean, so they didn't worry?
Oh, yes, yes. I must admit, that was a feeling that I had when I first came home, that I didn't like my mother to understand the conditions under which I'd lived for the last months, you see. And one was apt to make a light of the fact. In other words, swank that you are all right.
Now, were you so? I mean, do you dread going back to the front when your leave ended?
Oh yes, it was a big pull, a big pull, a big pull. I can tell you that. But by then, I knew that I was going to be commissioned. You see.
Well, now, when did you first find out about this possibility of commission?
When the sergeant major spoke before I came on leave. When the orderly sergeant was reading the names of the leave party.
And that was the first thing you knew of it?
Yes, yes. I hadn't been told by the colonel or anybody.
But it was quite a long time after that before you got your commission, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Before you were sent to train.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
When did you go on this leave? Because I'm a bit uncertain. Do you remember what month it was?
No, no. Oh, it's so far away, I can't remember.
That's all right. So what did you do between Armentières, roughly Christmas 15, and when you were on the Somme? Because I know you went to the Somme in July.
July.
So what were you doing in between?
Well, going up and down the line, moving here and moving there.
Do you remember much about that period?
Sorry?
Do you remember much about that period?
No, I can't. It was so quiet. There was nothing happened, really. Anywhere north of Armentières was a very quiet part of the line. Of course, in the meantime...
Anywhere south of Armentières, do you mean?
South of Armentières, that's right. Of course, there were always fresh recruits arriving who'd been trained in England, you know.
What was the stat? Were they as good as you originals, the recruits? Because they wouldn't that... Were they as good as you originals, the recruits, do you think?
Oh, no, no.
Why not?
That was one thing we found, that the extra people we got later on weren't as good as the originals.
Why not?
Well, because I don't think they'd had the swatting and the putting through their paces the same as, you see, for the first lot, you had your old army NCOs and this sort of thing to help you. Whereas they faded out or were promoted, you had to have a new lot of what you call sergeant majors and whatnot, and they weren't so strict as...
So the training wasn't as good, but
no.
Were they as good material?
Oh, yes, the good material, oh, yes.
So it was just that they weren't trained as well?
That's right.
Now, was A Company... Did it still have a Quayside connection, or were you now starting to get people from all over Newcastle and the north?
Well, from the time that we were in Hoosier, A Company gradually went down because they were being commissioned. And I was waiting to be commissioned.
So they were replaced by...
And they were replaced by outsiders.
And the outsiders didn't have a Quayside connection?
No,
so A Company was becoming less and less special?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
It didn't stand out anymore?
No. It was a model company when it went into action.
And what about you? You were still a Lance Corporal, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Did you not get promotion to corporal and sergeant
before? Yes, they wanted me to take it over, but when I knew I was going to be commissioned, I, you understand, I just wanted to hang on.
Why didn't you fancy being a sergeant, say?
It was such a shock being told that I was to be an officer.
So you just didn't want, you know, you weren't interested. Yes, I see. What about your connection with George Harbottle, who's the person we interviewed? How was he doing during this period? Do you remember much contacts or stories about him?
I saw George most weeks. He was a quartermaster sergeant of A Company. He was a Quaysider.
Did he do a good job as quartermaster?
He did a damn good job, I can tell you that.
In what way? I mean, what was so good about him?
Well, he took an interest in his job. And remember that George came up in the dark every night of the war and this sort of thing. You had to have men who understood things. And being a Quaysider, he was a little bit above in intelligence. I was very sorry he left after I did, of course. He was commissioned, same as I was. I thought it was good at the time, but the battalion would suffer when people like George went.
You said he was noticeably better than the other company quartermaster sergeants.
Oh yes, he was. He was a cut above everybody. Now, but you George was like myself. George had an antipathy to being sent away from the battalion. We had the sort of feeling that we started with the 6th Fusiliers, we'd like to finish with them, you see. There was no possible chance of being commissioned to the 6th Fusiliers. And eventually he went to the machine guns.
Now, it was during this quiet period, before some. Was it then that you got this job on the post?
Oh, yes. Well, the postman went wrong.
This is the chap who had mental problems or something.
That's right, yes.
Now, was he not stealing the contents?
No. It went on for some time, and that's why I hung on to the job, because I had, according to some people, I had a prison sentence waiting me, you see, because they blamed me. And this went on for some time. I'll tell you why.
Why did they blame you? Because you'd taken over from this chap, hadn't you?
No, because I was a chap appointed in A Company to look after the mail after he delivered it to the battalion. He went away every morning with his driver.
So he was the battalion postman?
He was the battalion postman. And I was appointed A Company after various people had been killed and things like that, you know. And all at once, I found people coming to me and saying, A Company, of all the companies in the battalion, was the company most likely to have registered letters addressed to it, because their parents had money. And there was a slight period when I was asked if they had no registered letters, and I said no. And it went on and on and on, and the more it went on, the more I didn't like it.
You could feel that people were suspicious of you.
Oh, absolutely. So it went on, and all at once I said, we'll have to do something about this. So I went to the post office quietly, that came in with the mail the Royal Engineers, post people, came in with the goods trade that brought the Russians, you know. And one or two of them kindly said to me, you know, we've given them everything that's come, and we are not responsible, we've delivered, I can show you receipts where they've been signed for.
For registered letters?
Registered letters, you see. So, it went on until the time came when I had to go and answer. And there was a quartermaster sergeant.
Who did you? Why did you have to go and answer? Could you just explain that? Sorry.
Well, I was being blamed for not delivering the letters. The battalion postman said he'd handed them over to me. And of course, it was the place where I didn't have to sign for them. It was done as a matter of courtesy. And I had a word.
So who did you have? Who did you have to go and who interviewed you?
I went. Who interviewed me?
Who did you have to go and see when you had to go and answer to, you know?
Oh, the colonel.
And what happened?
So I said to Freddie Byrne, who was manager of a bank in Newcastle, I said, there's something sadly wrong here, QMS. I said, we've got to do something about it. He says, you're too late to do anything about it. Why haven't you done something before? I says, well, I've just, you know, treated people to be honest, and if there wasn't any registered letters, there wasn't any. And he says, never mind, Hardy. He says, I'll have a think. And I just ask you to take one thing into consideration. Whatever army you're in, and wherever you are, there's always a trend, a human trend, to make yourself as comfortable as you possibly can be. And the quartermaster, Freddie Byrne, came to me the next day. He says, I've got a solution, I think, to the problem. I says, what? He says, well, he says, you know where Black is sleeping?
That was the name of the postman.
Eh?
Black was the name of the postman.
I says, yes. He says, get him out of here tomorrow. Tell him any bloody lies you like, but get him away from the battalion. And I went to had a few words with Black and told him that there were certain people waiting to discuss matters with him and whatnot. And we got him out of the way. And we went into the pigsty. He was billeted in the pigsty, which had been cleaned, of course, and whatnot, you know. And as I said, they would use anything in the army to be comfortable. And his little dugout was full of mail bags. He had a comfortable bed, you see. And we took the mail bags up, and every ruddy letter that was missing was there. So I went to Freddie Byrne immediately, and he said, oh, hard luck, if poor fellow must be demented. And he went straight to the colonel, and the colonel says, oh, well, you take over, Henderson, we'll see about things. And they had inquiries.
So what had the colonel said the first time he saw you? You said, oh, was that the first time the colonel saw you?
Yes, he says, words to the effect, well, we seem to have solved this, Henderson. You know,
so that's the only, that's when you saw the colonel, after you'd resolved it.
Oh, after we resolved it, what did you say?
You said you'd been called to see the colonel before. Had he told you off then, or what had happened?
No, he just said, are you telling the truth?
So that's all that had happened at the first meeting?
That's so, you see.
So what did he say at this second meeting, when you and Burns went in with the proof?
Yeah. And he says, I'll have a full inquiry made. He says, but I must appoint you, Henderson, now, here and now, whatever happens. You'll see that those letters get to the proper people. Any of that men that have been killed, I'll expect you to write to their parents and this sort of thing. And I was immediately seconded to that, to do nothing else. And it ended up one night, the colonel sent for me, and he says, Black's going back into the line, toot sweet. He didn't suffer any punishment. He was just considered to be in neglect of duty.
So he hadn't been stealing?
No, no, they were all there. And when you come to consider a thing like that, you've got to put your own interpretation. But the tragedy of the affair was this. He went straight back into the line to be an ordinary soldier. Within a week, he had his right leg shot off. And for years after the war, I used to meet him walking in the street. His father was a local businessman, had shops, etc. And I used to think to myself every time I met him, "Die, what a fool. Was he sane or was he not sane when that happened?"
So you took over the job of sorting it out, writing the letters, delivering the letters. Did you stay on as battalion postman after that?
Oh, for a while, yes, yes.
And what exactly did you do then as battalion postman? Could you just run through it in a bit more detail?
A battalion postman was, first of all, postman to the colonel, look after his meal in the officer's mail, receive the mail from the train as it comes into various rail heads, you know, go for it. And for that purpose, you had a mule, two mules and a driver. And you went away every day, which I started to do. And you were advised where the train was coming in and then come back.
So you had to sign for the registered letters?
Oh, yes, I had to sign, you see.
And about how much mail would you get for a battalion? I mean, was there a lot of it or each day? Or?
Oh, I should say three bags, not entirely half full, you know.
The same bags as they use today?
That's right. And they had been put up at various places, London, Newcastle.
What about parcels?
Parcels too. And parcels and registered letters were never sent up with the rations. Every time the battalion came out, the postman had these parcels and registered letters to give out.
So you took them to the battalion headquarters, the letters, right. And then the company postman would collect them from you.
That's right.
But they wouldn't sign for registered letters.
No, they did. Well, they would be having everybody...
Because you'd keep them.
Yeah. Eh?
You'd keep the registered letters.
Oh, yes. And I had to write quite a number of letters. It took me 3 months to clear up writing letters to relatives saying that I enclosed the draft that was sent with their letter as so-and-so, you see, and all this sort of thing. But eventually it was cleaned up and he was in hospital with a leg off. What a fine state of affairs.
And you stopped being battalion postman before you went to the Somme, did you? Why did you stop?
Oh, well, I was just a company postman, you see, and I'd been called in to help with this sort of thing.
So you only acted as battalion postman for a little while?
That's right, yeah.
And then you went back to being company postman?
That's right, yeah.
When you were company postman, would you have normal duties as well?
Oh, yes. Being postman was... extra to everything else.
Just another little job.
Little job, you see. And as a matter of fact, doing little jobs in the army kept you in touch with the lads. You get to know them better. You make friends and things like that, you know.
When you talk to the men, would you call them by the first names? Would they call you by your first name? Or would they call you corporal, lance corporal, whatever?
Oh, well, the thing to do, to be sure, on the safe side, because if you're caught not addressing them properly, you've got to tick off. And it was always Sergeant Major, he said, sir to them, and Sergeant Corporal or Lance Corporal. I was most particular about doing things.
And what about when you talk to the actual men? Would you just call them by the surname or what?
Oh, yes, I knew some of them. They were Newcastle fellows, you see, and you had to say, well, Bert, good luck to you.
So you'd call the men by their first name if you knew them well?
Oh, yes. You had to have some sort of camaraderie in the army or else it would have been a sticky sort of job.
And they'd call you Lance Corporal, wouldn't
they? Lance Corporal, that's right.
What about the ones that really knew you, like Bert, you know, your friends? What would they call you?
Why, they used to call me corporal, you know. There were never very few people say lance corporal. It was always corporal.
So they were doing the same as you, being careful?
Being careful, absolutely being careful. I tried not to break any rules and regulations. And probably that's why I was sorted out in the end to leave them.
Now, you hadn't heard any more about your commission before the Battle of the Somme, then?
No.
Now, what about the preparations for the Somme? Were you given? Was the battalion given any special training before that battle?
No. The only thing we knew about the Somme was that there was going to be tanks. Word had got out that there were going to be tanks going over to the German lines.
Now, So you weren't on the Somme before September the 15th. I think that was the first tank attack, wasn't it?
Yeah, first tank attack.
And what did you think about these tanks that you heard about? I mean, did you know what they were?
Oh, yes. Because we were used as working parties after we got there. And we did all sorts of things, unload this and unload that.
You were unloading the tanks?
Yes. If not the actual tanks, the equipment that the tanks wanted, you see.
So you knew what they were?
Oh, yes.
And what did you think of them? They were very new then, weren't
they? Oh, very new. Nobody had heard about tanks before. And I remember thinking, well, this thing won't go more than 5 yards. You know, it would get stuck.
So you didn't think, you weren't very optimistic about
it? I wasn't very optimistic about it. No, it depended upon the terrain over which they were asked to go. You could just as much as easy get stuck as go on.
So which part of the line of that attack on the 15th, where were you attacking towards?
Just a moment, we didn't go over with that first attack.
With the tanks?
With the tanks, no. We were there, but we didn't follow them over.
It was later
that we went to present, present in the Grand and these sort of places. When we came back to go out of the line, it was a damn cold morning and about took our skin off.
Okay, well, could you tell, what do you remember about the preparations for the attack on Bezant in the Grand? We can look up when it was. I'm not sure myself.
The place had been more or less, you know, well surveyed and this sort of thing. The Somme was a massacre, of course, in its own light. The whole Somme business was a tragedy. But we people, of course, we were just following orders. We went up where we were ordered to go and made the best of things.
Had you heard how the tanks had done on their first attack?
Yes, they hadn't done very well.
That's what you'd heard, is it?
Yes.
And how soon after was this attack? Was it quite soon after that first attack?
Just after it, yes.
Okay. So what do you remember about the attack then? Could you take me through from... in as much detail as you can.
Well, they were new. They were in the ruddy way as far as we were concerned. You can't have infantry standing in front of the tanks before they leave or anything like that. We just had to wait until the tanks got on.
And had you practiced working with the tanks at all?
No, I never practiced.
So what exactly happened? What was there on the day? Could you take me through it?
There was a bombardment by our side, you know. Then a sort of a halt, and the tanks went forward to be a surprise. And after that, it was every man for himself.
But what do you remember about it?
That it was a bloody affair. And we got up to Bezanten.
What do you remember about crossing no man's land, though? I mean...
Oh, well, that's done as quickly as possible. We run that whenever possible.
What kit were you carrying?
Well, we had nothing else but our rifles and our packs.
So just your small kit?
That, no, we had a pack. We had a pack on. That is the big release behind here, you know. We were prepared to go a long way further than what...
So you had your full kit on?
Your full kit on, yes. Oh, yes, 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 yes.
So that didn't that make it difficult to run? Because it's rather heavy.
Well, it is difficult to run, but it's one of the things you have to do in wartime. I've run with a pack on many a time. In amongst bullets and all sorts of things. But it either had to be done or else.
And what was the ground like in No Man's Land?
Oh, the ground on the Somme wasn't at all bad. I thought it was a good place. There were a lot of small hills, you know. It wasn't by any means too level, but... I thought it wasn't a bad area, the Somme.
What about shell holes and things like that?
Shell holes. You had to be careful about them. It was all right during the day and half dark. But the shell holes on the Somme were a disaster.